My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
I am Iron Man.
Hello, hello, and welcome back for first time to the Post Credit Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Italiano, senior writer at BroBible.com. Today, as always, I am joined in voice, not in face, by my co-host, Cade Onder, who you can find writing about video games over at comicbook.com. Today is our last show of 2023. We're going to be talking about what Marvel should do now that they officially fired Jonathan Majors following his guilty verdict. And then we're going to talk about our top five favorite movies slash games of the year and our top five of 2024. So to kick it off, we're going to start with Marvel. Well, first, Cade, what's going on, dude?
No, not much. Just chilling. Life is life. Ups and downs.
Ups and downs. Big plans for Christmas or?
No, not at all. Usually I go over to my mom's house, but she lives in Illinois. I live in Iowa, and my brother is not going. And so I was like, do I want to be there just by myself?
Getting older.
This yeah, I don't happens. Like it. I don't like it. It doesn't feel right. I'm going to go over there in January probably when I have more time off. But yeah, I don't like holidays anymore.
Any games that you got to catch up on?
Oh my god, to catch up on, yeah. Like, I got to go back and finish Starfield at some point. I want to play that RoboCop game. Like, I played like a little bit of it. It was pretty cool. There's a bunch.
Have you
of
played
stuff.
Baldur's Gate yet? Did we talk about this?
I haven't played it, but that's also on my list of things to do as well.
Yeah, I'm not like an RPG guy, but once I heard that you could change the size of your dick, I was like, oh.
$70 for dick changing simulator. Can't do it in real life, so I'm doing it in a video game.
All right, let's start with the MCU. Following Jonathan Majors was found guilty of third degree harassment and assault, he faces up to 1 year in prison. That means he's going to do no time. That's just how I feel like that's just how things work. When they say up to 1 year, it means that they're going to get off pretty much scot-free. Yeah. But his career is fucked. I mean, I don't think, his career is fucked, at least in terms of what it was supposed to be and what people were saying it was going to be like a month ago. Like, he was being crowned as like the next guy, not just in terms of stardom, i.e. MCU fame, but just as like a legitimately great performer. That is all out the window now. If he's a bad dude, he's a bad dude. Fuck him. That's kind of
you don't deserve to do good things if you're gonna be an asshole, right? Yeah, you don't deserve success.
That's kind of the long and short of my feelings about Jonathan Majors himself. As for the void that he now leaves in the MCU, it really is convenient that Loki season 2 gave them a pretty easy out, even though apparently this was all shot before the Majors thing came out.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, they just got in, they either A, got lucky as they ever have before, or they're lying because
it does seem very convenient, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was their final live action project of the year. I think the season finale / series finale came out the same day as the Marvels. So that capped off their year. They've got Deadpool 3 coming out next year, which is going to have absolutely nothing to do with Kang. Well, as far as I understand, the TVA is going to be involved, but I don't think there was any sort of Kang character involved. So not only do they have the time to sort of get their ducks in a row, but they have a movie in which they already were going to be doing sort of multiversal, but not only multiversal, like franchise shaping moves. If there was a time for them to do it, now's the time. As far as them like waiting until it was officially guilty, I mean, I understand why people would be annoyed by that. But if you're annoyed by that, you haven't been paying attention to how this world and specifically this country works. They rightly assumed that if Majors got off, people would just forget about it and let it go. He didn't, so they won't. And what I do think is fucked up, though, is that they didn't even put out a statement and that they let the trade and that they let
almost the trade. A leak in quotes. Right. I mean, it was not, but it is, you know, it's one of those things where sources told us, but
yeah. So that's pretty much the rundown of the situation, as far as I know. And then it comes down to what they're going to do from here. Now, the THR report said that they're debating between two routes, both of which are obvious as far as I'm concerned. One is to recast the role. I think recasting is uniquely easier than normal with Kang, given his multiversal is the like being there being million types of him is the core identity of his whole fucking thing. So like if suddenly he doesn't look the same, I am sure a multi-billion dollar franchise could figure out a way to explain that.
Fine. And Ant-Man's the only one. Ant-Man and Loki are the only ones who've really met him, right? So like it's not like
and
someone
Ant-Man's
else in
the only one who's heard the word Kang.
Right, yeah. So it's not like anyone else in these movies is going to be like, oh, who are you? Like, it's not going to be a problem within the storytelling. They can have a scene justified to something. I don't know how you do that, but like, because obviously they're not going to bring him back for 5 seconds, and Jonathan Majors probably wouldn't want to do that. So I don't know how they make that transition, but I mean, they have a lot of time, and it's going to be... I think it's going to be a smaller problem than people realize, right? Like, because once it's done, it's done. Like, it's like you've already overcome that. It's not a long spanning problem. Once you find the person you're going to recast, the problem just becomes, okay, how do we address it in the movie? Do we just leave it alone and just say, figure it the fuck out? You can read between the lines. I mean, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. It feels like a big deal because more or less the question has been, do they recast or do they put a different villain in? And I think that would be a mistake to do that.
So, and then the other route is pivoting to a new big bad entirely. So what do you think about the decision to wait this long to make this move? What do you, if they were to recast it, is there someone that you would like to see? Or if they were to go, if they were to pick a new villain, which one would you want it to be? And which of those choices do you personally prefer?
I don't want to see them put in like Doctor Doom or something. I think that'd be a huge fucking mistake to rush that storyline. That's a character you dedicate to its own little phase or whatever. And you build up to and do lots of cool stuff there. Forcing him in will ruin a lot of things, I think. And so I think the only choice is to recast. And let's be real. Like, Marvel has been contemplating this for months, right? Like, it's not like they're like, all right, now we start. Like, they've had probably path A, path B, what happens when he's guilty, what happens if he's innocent. And they have been steadily, you know, building on those plans ever since. So it's not like this is surprising to them. It's not like they are like fucking running around with their heads cut off. They have a plan, and I'm sure they're already looking at actors or whatever. It's just a matter of, again, how they do it. I don't know who I'd want to play Kang. A lot of names have been thrown out there. I think like John David Washington's really good. Like, he's a good actor. I wouldn't be opposed to him.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's there's a lot of...
He's definitely stiff enough to play that character, I'll tell you that.
I think he could pull it off if they gave him the opportunity. But
Boyega is another one.
Boyega is like, I don't want to do it.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, he's had enough with fucking...
I can't blame him.
Disney for one lifetime, I think.
And especially... I guess the question is, who is willing to do it? Not necessarily because of Marvel,
that is
but
something that the THRP said. It's like one problem there. It's like, who is going to want to take on a role that was so publicly like fall from grace?
Yeah, it's not like what's his name from Iron Man? What was his name? Oh my gosh, why is this escaping me?
Terrence Howard.
Yes, it's not like him where it was like one movie that was the start of the MCU and then they moved on and it was like a money thing or whatever. This is like there's bad blood attached to this. Like, it's someone did something bad and they have to get rid of him. Who wants to come in and try to reclaim this role? And that's that's a scariest position to be in. So
and that makes me think that they're not going to go that route. They've got the, you know, it'd be interesting to see what they would be doing if Loki didn't present them with such a clean out, or if Ant-Man 3, which was weird about Ant-Man to begin with. It's like, we want this guy to be our next big bad, but yet the fucking literal jokey Avengers guy beat him, you know? So
yeah,
But they pretty much tied a bow on the three versions of him we've seen. He Who Remains was tied up in season one and two. Victor Tomley was tied up in season two. And Straight Kang was tied up in Ant-Man. Now, I understand that there was a post-credit scene that featured a ton of them, but there was also a post-credit scene of the guy from Ted Lasso in Thor 4
Hercules.
and Harry Styles. So I don't think Marvel feels particularly beholden to these post-credit scenes at all. I think that they know that fans are willing to, like, for lack of a better term, give them a pass on this one, be like, well, you know, I mean, fuck, like, who could have seen this coming?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like nobody's gonna go into the Kang Dynasty and be like, "Hang on, what are you doing? Where's the other guy?" Like, everyone's aware that this is a
I've
shitty
also seen people be like, oh, it was in
movie.
Major's contract that he and only he could play any version of Kang. And I'm like, dude, I'm pretty sure getting charged with a crime would probably void that
Yeah,
type of
there's got to
contract.
be some sort of
Like,
Disney
yeah,
would
like
not lock themselves into
I don't
something
think
like
it's
that.
like black and white like that. Like,
Yeah.
he could get thrown in jail and then be like, oh, well, I guess he's our Kang
Disney has
forever.
the best lawyers in the world. Even if that was the case, they'd be like, "Listen, come on, this guy, we cannot have him in our movie." And you can just point to the fact that Magazine Dreams is like probably not releasing for years to come at this point, because of whatever. They can be like, "Listen, this other studio doesn't want anything to do with him. Why would we want him to be the center of our huge tentpole franchise?" It's just. Yeah, I don't want a new villain. I want them to recast. I if they, because I think one, I because I think that creates a whole other sea of problems. Like, you set up Kang as this big bad and then he's gone very quickly. I mean, like, the ending of Ant-Man leaves like a lot of questions about, is Ant-Man even in his universe anymore, right? That was like a big question. It was like, there's something off about the ending of that movie. And it feels like there's a lingering question that needs to be answered there. And that revolves around Kang. And
But like, is picking up a narrative thread from Ant-Man worth the logistical and PR and just every type of headache that would come with it? If Ant-Man 3 was like a $1 billion hit and people were like, oh, we love this movie, give us more, then I think they'd be a little more stuck. But people have largely forgotten the everything about that film.
You're
So
right. Yes. I think that Marvel's in a situation, right, where they're being questioned about their quality and whatnot. I don't want them to bring in another really good villain like Doctor Doom and bring them in and continue to reiterate upon, you're rushing things, you're doing things that you don't have a plan for. Write it out. Get as long as you can find another actor who's willing to do it. I mean, if you can't, if there's literally not a single person, which I would have a hard time believing someone
Yeah,
would
but
turn
then
down
again,
$50 million.
you don't want to,
Well,
just get some guy off the street to play your next big,
I don't mean just some guy,
One
but
suggestion I've seen is that they go the Thanos route and go CG and just have someone do
yeah,
his voice.
I think that would be
That's that
the
could
best
be their way
solution.
out.
I think so. I think that would be the way to do it. I think they have a lot of options that don't require them to completely throw out their plans and do someone new. Again, don't waste Galactus, Doctor Doom, whomever the fuck, because you got dealt a bad hand. Like, it's just, that would be ruining multiple things at once, and I think really kneecap them for the future. I mean, it's. Like I said, all they have to do is figure out how they can recast him, and then they're good. Like, that's the only problem. It doesn't affect the story of the movies, right? It just affects who's playing him. And that's the only issue. And once that's done, I think you're fine.
Choices that they could go to, of course, as you touched on, Doctor Doom, Galactus, there's Magneto. They could go to Mephisto, which I think would be a bit of a tough sell to the suits. Another rumor I've seen out there today, who people are constantly, I'm tired of these insiders just posting shit. I'm just getting real fucking sick of
There's
it.
a lot of garbage. A lot of
What?
gar It's crazy.
But somebody who, to be fair, has gotten things right more than they haven't. I saw this week that Mr. Sinister is being thought of as the X-Men villain. I think that is a great idea. I also don't necessarily think with Secret Wars coming that you need an overarching villain until then. You know, if you're gonna do the faithful adaptation and have Doom be involved in that, then the clock is ticking to get him involved.
Mr. Sinister's a good pick. That's a villain that like has always kind of lingered in the X-Men movies. Like they've never gone for it. Like he was supposed to be John Hamm was supposed to be him in like the New Mutants or whatever, or like they were gonna
Right.
set up for that.
That's good
The
casting.
villain of the new Wolverine game is apparently Mr. Sinister. So
Oh,
there's a lot of
interesting,
things
interesting.
building up
And
to.
I saw in the leaks that whoever made those games, Insomniac, right, has signed a deal with Marvel to make X-Men games through 2035. So if there's that level of franchise synergy and connectivity, then maybe Sinister being featured in that game is a hint that they have plans for him in the films too.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. Like, even if it's not like a Marvel mandate, it's just like you said, good synergy, and it's pushing a villain. Because I mean, all those X-Men movies all kind of revolved around Magneto. Right, like there were like nine of those movies, and they all go back to
Yeah,
Magneto.
but I did see a take that like
Right,
he is kind of a necessary
he is.
ingredient to the whole thing.
He is. He should be a part of it, but they need to graduate to a new villain, like someone who can come in and be the primary antagonist beyond Jean Grey and Magneto and the Sentinels.
Right.
Because that's been done so many times at this point. Yeah, I don't know. There's no villain that I'm willing to sacrifice to give Marvel an easy out to their
One,
problem.
I think what makes like someone like Galactus unusable, because where do you go from there? That's the
Exactly.
franchise ender. They would have to reboot from scratch. So I think that that takes that off the board.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, moving on. Let's talk about our top five favorite movies of 2023. Now, I want to caveat this by saying I still need to see Poor Things, Holdovers, Boy and the Heron, Anatomy of a Fall, and Godzilla Minus One. Kate, off the top of your head, is there anything that you feel like you haven't seen that you still want to see?
Holdovers is one of them. Aquaman, I guess. I want to see Ferrari and the Iron
Ooh.
Claw. I'm seeing those this weekend. But I think I've seen enough that I can give you a pretty good list
All
of
right.
what I liked.
And then I want to just fire off a few of my honorable mentions. If you have some as well, feel free to do the same. I've got Guardians of the Galaxy 3, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, The Killer, and Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, those are most of mine, my honorable mentions. I maybe Air, Creed three. Did you see Air?
Yes, feels like a lifetime ago, but
Yeah, it
yes.
really does. Yeah, I would say those are pretty solid honorable mentions. Maybe
All right,
Saw
so then
X. I really like Saw X.
you start. Give us your five.
I'll start with The Killer. I really like The Killer. I think that's my number five. I really, really enjoyed that's some peak David Fincher, just total perfectionism. I think every moment of that movie really just lands. And I hope we don't go another fucking what 10 years between David Fincher movies,
I
not
know.
including Mank.
Between real ones, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, dude. I watched that film, I think, like three times within the first 3 days that it came out. It's everything I think we've talked about on the show a bit on the last podcast. It's everything that makes Fincher great, but also an advancement of what he's been doing, because I think there is a element of like self, what's the word when you make fun of yourself?
Self-referential,
Self-referential. No, self
deprecating.
deprecation, because the whole conceit is that like this guy is meticulous as hell, and like he's maybe not that great at his job. And is that Fincher, speaking on his work itself, his work itself, himself as a filmmaker, the characters in his films. I just think it is smarter and funnier than given credit for, because everyone rightly focuses on the performance and the theme and the tone. But I think it's a funny and it's a smart film. My number five is Past Lives. Past Lives reminds me.
I need to watch that still.
Past Lives reminds me of the Netflix show Master of None, but just in film form. I.e., it's sort of the examination of the millennial New York City life at a period of crossroads. And as somebody who is experiencing that, it is a very resonant idea to me. The idea of like, see you in the next life, see you in a past life, is something that I've always loved. You usually only see that in science fiction. So to see that sort of idea applied to a real world, stripped down indie drama, I think is, you know, kind of perfect mix of my taste. The way that everyday life and everyday people are filmed in this, I think is beautiful. I think New York City looks great. And it's a movie that is, I think it ultimately succeeds in its ending, where it's able to achieve being both happy and sad at the same time, which is a very tough thing to do. But when you can do that, and you can do it well, it's a fucking home run every single time.
Yeah, I have the Blu-ray for that. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm trying to find time for it. I've been going through a love crisis lately, so I don't know if it's the appropriate movie for me to be watching at the moment.
It might be, though. That's the thing.
I don't know if I can take it. But yeah, I'm definitely going to try to watch it before the end of the year.
All right, kid, what's your number four?
Oh, man. These are always so hard. I'm subject to change these, by the way, by the end of the year. So nobody get mad at me if you don't like it. I'm going to throw in Killers of the Flower Moon. I really, really liked it. I think it has the right amount of... Did we talk about it on the podcast? I can't remember.
Killers of the Flower Moon? No, I don't think so.
It takes the Martin Scorsese formula of like, here's the rise of someone who's doing awful things to get very wealthy, but does not depict it in the way that it does in like Goodfellas and The Wolf of Wall Street, where it's like, this is fun, this is exciting, you should maybe not like this, but yet you can't not be entertained by it. And this movie's like, this is awful. The way these people did these things is terrible and reprehensible and disgusting, and doesn't depict the fall from grace with the same kind of like, oh no, it's like, yeah, fuck those guys. The way it depicts everything in kind of like a horror isn't the right word, but definitely disgust is really interesting. And I appreciate that Martin Scorsese can use something that he's used repeatedly as a formula in his movies over and over again and kind of flip it on its head.
Killers for me is tough. I said at the time that I was ultimately let down by it, because I think that it was sold as a sort of mystery crime thriller, and it was not that. I understand the reasons for having to sell it as such. I understand that it is not on them to match up with my expectations. That is not a valid criteria of art.
Yeah.
That being said, I did, when I left it, said it reminds me of what has now become one of my favorite films of all time, and that is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I went in expecting it to be Tarantino's new Pulp Fiction, right? I was expecting that sort of frenzied, high energy, out of order plot. There's a better word for that, but it escapes me right now. And it wasn't. It wasn't like that at all. And so when I walked out of the theater, I was like, oh, bummed. I was like, oh, shit, dude. I really wanted A and I got X. But after I just watched it a few more times and learned to understand what it really is, it grew and grew and grew on me. I think Killers of the Flower Moon is going to have a similar effect on me, and that's why I'm psyched to watch it again. My number four is John Wick 4, one of the best action movies ever made. It figured out a way to continue to elevate the John Wick formula with, it's probably the funniest John Wick film. Keanu Reeves probably talks the least of the John Wick films. It adds a character, an anti-hero, that is arguably just as compelling as John Wick himself and Donnie Yen's character. It wouldn't be surprising to me if they did like a mini series around him or something, because that character was just so dope. Looks beautiful, as all of these films has. that overhead video game type shot is something I've never seen in an action or in film, I think in general before. And its conclusion, if that's the way that they conclude it, I told this to Chad Stahelski when I spoke to him. I was like, the tombstones of like loving husband, and I think that was it on it, was like perfect to me. So yeah, John Wick 4.
Yeah, John Wick 4 was really fucking good. Like, I just remember watching that movie in the theaters and feeling so enamored by it, because I didn't really love John Wick 3. I like it, but like, that movie was very long and kind of exhausting by the end of it. But 4 is even longer, I think, and is fucking perfect. For my number 3, oh boy, I'm going through a list here trying to figure out. I have so many. Oh, Blackberry. Did you see Blackberry?
No, actually, I haven't. Wow.
It's really funny. It's good. It's like dramatic, but has the right amount of humor to it. I just watched this on Amazon a couple days ago, and I was like, this is awesome. There's been a lot of these like corporate biography movies in the last year or so, but yep, like this one really landed for me. Glenn Howerton is fucking hysterical. I mean, everything every choice he makes in this movie just had me cracking up. There's a moment where he like comes into their office early in the movie, and he just like breaks a phone for no reason. It's been replaying in my head over and over again. It's really good.
Yeah, I've got to check that one out for sure. I've heard only good things. Number 3, I have Asteroid City. Similar to the way that I feel about The Killer, I think that Asteroid City is a very self-reflective work. I think it is a distillation of everything that we love from Wes Anderson. As we've come to expect with his films, I think it looks gorgeous. I think the performances are great, and it has my favorite top number one scene of the year, which is between Jason Schwartzman and Margot Robbie on the balcony when they smoke and talk for a bit. That's my favorite scene of the year.
I say he's a late bloomer, but maybe I think you'll need to replace me. You say, what? Why? How? I can't. I say, maybe I think you'll need to try.
It is one of those movies that I think that like in 5 years we're gonna be like, oh, that should have won more shit.
This isn't my number 2, but I just remembered I saw Wonka last night.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly good.
Yeah, like, I heard that.
Genuinely a wonderful movie. I was very happy with it. Number 2, again, subject to change, but I think I'll say Barbie.
Mm.
I don't really love all of the messaging in the movie. Like, it's not the message itself, it's the way it's delivered. Sometimes it's like way too heavy-handed and a little frustrating, but I cannot deny how much I was laughing during this movie, like to the point of it being almost ridiculous. Like, every time Ryan Gosling is on the screen, I'm locked in. He's throwing the funniest jokes of his career in this movie constantly.
You just hold on for 1 second.
Oh, okay.
Sublime!
I don't know. I have to think about that.
I posted that clip the other day of him yelling sublime, and yep. That's been in my head on repeat ever since. So I'll put that in as my tentative number 2.
Barbie, yeah, that's something that I'm psyched to rewatch as well now that it's on streaming. My number 2 is The Iron Claw. I loved this movie. As I told the cast, it reminds me of one of those TNT dramas that we'll see on the channel for years. It's got a great balance of drama, heartbreak, comedy, friendship, romance, family, action. Not like, you know, stuff
right,
blowing up, but you know, the stuff in the ranks. Efron deserves to be nominated for Best Actor. I think the film deserves to be nominated for Best Picture. I think the director, Sean Durkin, deserves to be nominated for Best Director. If it wasn't for just the all-encompassing power of our combined number one, this would be my favorite film of the year. Not by a stretch, but by a pretty good amount. I'm so psyched for people. I'm so excited for you to see it so we can talk about it more.
Yeah, I'm seeing it on Thursday night. Very excited. For my number one, Oppenheimer.
They won't fear it until they understand it. And they won't understand it until they've used it.
Just absolutely, like, from the moment I saw it, I knew it'd be my favorite movie of the year. I think I was like, it'd be a very hard contest. I mean, I flew to fucking New York to see it, so like that should tell you my commitment to Christopher Nolan. But yeah, that movie is just absolutely incredible. You've said it if you watch the third act and that's your favorite act, you know ball. Like, that's just how it is. Like, yep. All the courtroom stuff is fucking incredible, especially scene with Jason Clarke, that's his name, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that back and forth between them as the music is
you.
That is on my brain all of the time. It's just so fucking good. I can watch that scene over and over again. I mean, the way Christopher Nolan, who is best known probably for making action movies, was able to put the intensity of his actions, he's like, you know, he loves cross-cutting, right? And the drama of cross-cutting, and the way he was able to implement that into a scene of people talking and make that feel like the most intense, stressful thing I've seen this year is fucking incredible.
I agree with everything you said. That is my number one as well. Nolan is long due. I think he's going to win Best Picture. I think he's going to win Best Director. I think Killian is... Well, the Paul Giamatti thing is interesting. I still think Killian is going to pull it out. I think Robert Downey Jr. is going to win Best Supporting. I watched May, December. Charles Melton is good. There is no fucking way on earth he's going to win over RDJ. I can promise you that right now. All right, so that'll do it for 2023. Let's move it to 2024. All right, we are now talking about our most anticipated movies of 2024. Once again, I want to shout out some honorable mentions, those films being Joker, Foil Adieu. I don't know if I'm saying that right, the sequel to Joker. Ballerina, the John Wick spinoff with Ana de Armas, Deadpool 3, Quiet Place Day 1, and Kingdom of Planet of the Apes. Cage, you got some or no?
No, some of those are on my list. So.
Okay. There you go. All right, I'll start off this time. Number 5 was supposed to come out late 2023. Disney fucked around and got rid of it, and now it's been picked up by Focus Features. I think that is Jeff Nichols, the bike rider, similar to the Iron Claw. It reminds me of one of those TNT dramas that I grew up with and loved. Stars Austin Butler, Jodie Comer, Tom Hardy, Michael Shannon, and is hitting theaters on June 21st.
That's my number 5 as well.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Nothing? Just
no, staying there? It's just like a cool fucking drama with a big cast that I want to see, and I'm pissed off it's not out right now.
Yeah, I know. June now. Yeah. All right. Number 4, I've got Gladiator 2, the sequel to 2000's Best Picture winner, directed by Ridley Scott, starring Paul Mescal, Denzel Washington, Connie Nielsen, not starring Jaimin Hansu, that is a post-credit pod exclusive, and Joseph Quinn, and Pedro Pascal, and it is hitting theaters on November 22nd. I was largely out on this idea for as long as it had been talked about online, but once he cast Paul Mescal and Denzel, I was all in.
Yeah, it's a good cast. I haven't seen Gladiator.
Oh, dude, you're a fucking... Skin of a rank, though.
Bringing out the wine glass to drown out that I'm way uncultured. I'll get to it. I do want to. I'm very excited for this. The cast is really good, so I will watch Gladiator before the end of the year. Promise you.
Cage, your 4.
My 4. I'm gonna go with Deadpool 3. I think it is the most interesting Marvel movie of a long time. I think it's doing really interesting things, bringing back all these X-Men characters and killing them off or whatever. And I like Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. He's my guy. So I'm here for it. And I like Deadpool. And I'm surprised it has taken as long as it has to get a new Deadpool movie out, given what one was like 2016 or something, and two was like 2018. Like, they were pretty back to back. And so I'm just happy to see Deadpool's back and fucking shit up in the MCU.
Yeah, I mean, MCU's first R film. I think that is of note. Yeah. I think that, you know, I love how meta it seems like it's going to be about the whole Fox universe. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. The matchup of Sean Levy and Deadpool 3 and rated R doesn't make sense on paper, but I think when you realize that Sean Levy is more of a point guard, he's not like the, you know, the star forward that you need to rely on to put up 30 points a game. He's just more of a steady pair of hands to guide the ship and distribute it to more talented people. So I'm willing to bet that Deadpool 3 is effectively written, directed, and produced by Ryan Reynolds. Yes. And Sean's just his buddy and a competent director. And so that's where that team up came to be.
For sure.
My number three, I'm willing to bet that you weren't smart enough to put this on your list. I bet this is going to be something that is slept on generally, and that is Alien Romulus.
Oh, no? I keep forgetting if this is a movie or a TV show.
The movie. Like... The confusion is that I think it was originally supposed to be straight to streaming. But
okay, that's right. Yes.
Directed by Fede Alvarez, Don't Breathe, Evil Dead 2013. Directing Kaylee Spaney, who's now absolutely huge thanks to Priscilla, also starring Isabella Merced. That is hitting theaters on August 16th. Alien is pound for pound one of my favorite franchises out there, period. So, and anytime that there's any new version, I am there day one. It also, if you don't count the Alien versus Predator films, its batting percentage is pretty fucking high. And I've heard that Ridley Scott saw this one and thought it was dope. So all of those things combined has me hyped.
Are you a Covenant guy?
I am a Covenant guy. Hell yeah. I think Prometheus is like legit great. Yeah. I don't feel the same about Covenant, but I think it's, you know, solid good. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. It's a good horror movie. My number three, I'll put Joker 2. If it wasn't what it is, I probably would put it in my honorable mentions. But like the fact that it's a musical is like so weird that I'm like, that I gotta see that. I wanna see what they're doing there.
Yeah.
It just the idea of taking a $1 billion R-rated movie that was already, I wouldn't say risky, but like not traditional, getting away with that and then being like, all right, we're gonna get even weirder with it. We're making it a musical between Lady Gaga and the Joker. That's fucking cool to me. That shows that they believe in Todd Phillips to do whatever the hell he wants. And I'm like, that's cool. And Joaquin Phoenix is back and he's just traditionally not this kind of person. So all of that speaks volumes to me. And I'm very interested in it.
Fair points. My number two, Furiosa, a Mad Max saga directed by George Miller, the sequel to 2015's modern masterpiece, Mad Max Fury Road, stars Anya Taylor-Johnson and Chris Hemsworth playing what looks to be a delightful villain. That'll be hitting theaters quite soon, relatively soon, May 24th.
Yeah, I'm excited for that too. I really love Fury Road. That was a really good theatrical experience. So I'm excited to see that this movie is actually finally happening, because for the longest time, it was like, oh, we're going to do it. And it's like, are you? And so now it's actually coming out. I'm pretty excited. My number two, Dune Part 2.
Yep, I've heard of it.
It's gonna be a big one. Another movie that got delayed from this year to next year. I'm very excited for it. I love the direction they're going in. I think it's really exciting. It sounds like Dune Part 1 was kind of the setting the table for something much grander, and I was already pretty interested in that one, but Part 2 seems much more exciting, so I'm really interested.
Yeah, I wish I was as hyped for this film as most people are. I need to rewatch the first Dune. I just remember it boring the shit out of me. just boring the shit out of me. My number one, I feel like this is slept on in the general film community. It's weird because it's coming out the soonest of everything on this list, and we haven't seen much of it. It is a follow-up from the director of 2019's Best Picture-winning Parasite. That is Bong Joon-ho. Oh, yes. The movie is Mickey 17. It stars Robert Pattinson, Naomi Ackie, Toni Collette, Mark Ruffalo, and Steven Yeun. It hits theaters on March 29th. I have this top of my list for a few reasons. First and foremost, I rewatched Parasite a week ago, I want to say last week. First time I've rewatched it, I think, since it came out. One of the best movies I've ever seen.
Wow.
Every single moment is filled with such drama and dread. The twists are so perfectly crafted. The thematics are both poignant but delicately laid out. It is, you could tell me it's a horror, it's a comedy, it's a drama. You could make a case for all three of those things. So his follow-up, a fully English film, which of course we've seen him do before with Snowpiercer and Okja. Okja, Snowpiercer, fantastic. Robert Pattinson, so that's reason one. Reason number two, Robert Pattinson is one of the most exciting A-listers we have. He's been on a 3-4-5 year heater that is only seeming to build and build and build. I think that this is just a wildly genius next step for him. And third is I've read the book that this is based on, and it is an awesome sci-fi book. I see the fit between Bong Joon-ho and the themes that he likes to touch on. And this movie, immediately, it's an incredibly unique story. And I will just say that the book is called Mickey 7, and changing it to 17 makes a huge, huge difference.
Interesting. Yeah, I considered putting this on my list, but given we only have one teaser and it's like pretty vague, and I've never read the book and I don't really know what it's about, I was like, I can't really say I'm like over the moon about it. But the talent behind it definitely makes an honorable mention. I mean, I'm a big Robert Pattinson guy, so I'm there day one for anything he makes. So yeah, I'm pretty excited for that. My number one, I'm surprised you didn't mention this at all, was another movie that got delayed out of this year. Our girl Zendaya is getting a train ran on her by tennis
players.
That's
your players. Number one?
Well, yeah, I do think so. I think that
looks, I like, did the trailer think about it, but it's awesome. but it's like, how do I put this lightly? I don't have faith that she is going to get nude.
That is not why it's number one on my list, you fucking freak.
Why the fuck else would you rank that? What other reason do you have to be excited for that movie? Don't listen, fucking bullshit
it,
me.
It looks hot. It looks like a hot movie. I won't lie to you. It looks
okay,
horny
so then
as fuck.
That's the same thing.
Yeah,
that's...
I just, yeah, okay, fair. But no, I mean, like the trailer, like there are movies that are horny, but they're not well made.
Right, yeah, right.
they're not good movies, but this movie looks like it genuinely has the right kind of balance of like, we're making something that's going to be really salacious and really risky, and it's gonna get people all riled up, but it looks like it'll actually have some merit to it. It's not just sex for the sake of sex. I think that's when you start making movies straight for Netflix and your 50-year-old mother watches them.
Wow. You know, I was going to put this on my honorable mentions. I did not. So I'm glad that you brought it up. That hit theaters in
like March, I think.
May, March.
Sometime in the spring.
Yeah. So that one's pretty soon. Luca Guadagnino, right?
Mm-hmm.
Guadagnino, who also did Call Me By Your Name.
Mm-hmm.
He's horny. He's just kind
known
of
for making some horny fucking movies. You got boys fucking peaches. You got tennis players getting trains run on them. I mean... What's next? I want to see what this guy's got cooking.
All right, so that's going to do it for our most anticipated movies of 2024. Now we're going to swing over to some of my interviews that I have accumulated over the last few weeks. We have the cast of Iron Claw. That is Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White, Harris Dickinson, and Stanley Simons. We then have Gareth Edwards, director of The Creator, Rogue One, and Godzilla. And then finally, Jaimin Ansu, he is in Rebel Moon Part 1, an atrocious movie, just truly, deeply terrible movie, but Jaimin is a incredible artist, he's a deep thinker, that was one of my favorite conversations I've ever had, so I hope you will all stick around for that. Boys, what I liked most about this film is how real the bonds between you all felt. Was there a certain moment where you feel like you sort of cracked the code of that bond between the four of you? When I spoke to Sean, he had brought up the football scene. And I asked that because I imagine, like, beyond just being good at your jobs, you must have bonded off camera as well to make this feel so real.
Everything at that farmhouse, which was sort of the first half of filming that we went through, we got to do all the brother stuff kind of right there, and that was really positioned well for us in, you know, chronologically how we shot the movie, because we got to not think about the wrestling so much and focus on the brothers' relationship, which was, I think, the most important part of the story.
Yeah, and not too much like tragedy had hit the family yet. Yeah. There was still this time of kind of like celebration. It was exciting. Like these men were starting to get into the sport and stuff like that. And I think there was like a lot of like hope and excitement surrounding the family and the brothers. And you were, you know, Kevin was like falling in love, and there was like so much kind of like positive.
Yeah, positive energy around the family, and there really are. There was this was at the beginning of their you know, very quick rise to fame, and yeah, like really, or about to take over the world of wrestling in a way that had never been done before.
How did playing men whose jobs were so intensely tied to who they were cause you to sort of look at the way you approach your own work?
Oh, that's interesting.
The intensity of which that, you know, they made wrestling everything in their lives. It's inspiring.
Yeah, it's admirable. Yeah,
it's definitely admirable.
The commitment to that.
The physical and mental commitment to that is very interesting. And I think that the extent that they were getting injured a lot, and that was, you know, luckily we have stunt doubles in acting, and we didn't have to necessarily go through what they went through. But I think that seeing these people who put their all into something like that, that's always inspiring. And I definitely took something away from it personally.
That perseverance of these men.
Exactly.
I think.
Yeah. Perseverance is a good word for it.
Yeah.
I think seeing Kevin's journey as well, and that endurance of like his spirit has always been like incredibly impressive.
Totally. And also like Shaw, like just like he said that thing to you, I think, about like how if you do it, like you just like you get hurt or whatever, you keep going, like you just give 100% always. Yeah. And I think that's very.
That can sort of be relatable to a lot of things in other areas,
exactly.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in some sense, it's a cautionary tale a little bit, you know, about committing and these guys, I think, gave their whole lives to
their
sport. Their identities over to it. And, you know, it's interesting how in some aspects, you know, there you could draw some parallels between that and acting. But this is it's so much more. It feels like everything in this story. And yeah, I mean that's what made it really exciting. I think this pulls back the curtain behind professional wrestling and reveals how much it takes out of you. We have so much respect for this sport and for these guys, and it means everything to kind of tell their story in the way that we have. Yeah, it feels really
your brilliant. Guys' hard work paid off, because I love this film. It's one of the best I've seen this year, and I mean this in the best way that I can. It reminds me of one of those films that you'll see on like TNT for years to come that our dads would just crush. Like, I see that coming, and I feel like that's something that we're losing a lot of, but I still love those films, so it was great to see that again.
Rock and roll, man. That's huge.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I love those. So just real quick before I wrap, I touched on how, you know, how close you guys felt. I'm curious if you guys had a group chat while you were on film, and if you did, what it was called.
We didn't have a name.
It wasn't a name.
I don't know if we had a name.
I must say though, Zach's, we were just talking about earlier, Zach's texts are so motivational. He's such a good.
It's so nice.
It was like a big paragraph.
Like at the end of every day, it was just like, that was
praise.
Amazing today.
It was pretty.
I just wanted to make sure. I wanted to make sure the whole time I was like, are you guys feeling what I'm feeling right now? Because I'm fired up.
Yeah.
Like, that was electric. Like, as much as it's a film and we have rehearsal and stuff like that. There's nothing to it but to do it. Like, we, all these guys went out there every day with limited rehearsal and a lot on the line, and just like committed to the moves and like wore it every day, and it hurt, man. We were sore and messed up. I was just so proud of everybody in on this movie, and I mean, it's an achievement. I'm just stoked for all you guys.
It's still going on, man.
Paid off, guys. It's awesome. I've got to wrap here real quick. Stanley, I just want to shout you out. Well, I loved this whole film. The thing that stuck in my head most for these last few weeks is that song, I Want to Live That Way Forever. I didn't know that it was made for the film. I asked Sean about it because I've been trying to find it online for weeks. Awesome moment, man.
Yeah. It's Richard Reed Perry wrote it, and I mean, it's a testament to him and Sean for making it essentially the theme of
the big time, man.
Yeah.
All right, boys.
And I had a great band as well. Shout out Lovers.
For sure. Yeah. All right, y'all. Thank you, fellas.
Much, really appreciate
congrats.
It.
Congrats. Folks, today I am joined by one of my absolute favorite filmmakers, Gareth Edwards. Thank you so much for your time today, sir.
No, thanks for having me. Thank you.
Gareth, are you a little bit concerned that one day AI is going to download your film in its brain and use it to be like, see, look, we aren't the bad guys?
No, I feel very confident that AI is going to download this film, and when it destroys the rest of mankind, is going to save me. And they're going to go, you understand, leave him alone. He gets us. And apparently I'm allowed a plus one. So depending on how this chat goes, you know.
Okay, good, good. Then I'll bring the butter. All right, so where I think is most sci-fi films tend to lose a bit of steam in their third act, I think that that act in The Creator is best. And I think that that's kind of the case for all your work. Monsters, Godzilla, Rogue One. So I want to know your keys to crafting a satisfying sci-fi conclusion.
I mean, thank you. I mean, it's always the aim. I work backwards usually from an ending. It's a tricky one because you can't totally start at an end and go to the beginning, because you might end up with a beginning that is very flat and doesn't like launch you into a story well. And so you've kind of got to do two both at the same time and try and meet in the middle. So the real problematic part of a film for me is always the middle of where the beginning and the end kind of connect in a weird way. But yeah, the ending is the most important part, in that, like, my favorite part of a joke is the punchline, you know. And the reason I don't really watch TV, it's a terrible thing, you know, like, you know, serial television. I for some reason, I after like three episodes, everyone always recommends these shows, and after like the third episode, I just find I'm not watching it anymore. And then I kind of hit a point where I was like, what is the matter with me? Why don't I do this? And then realized, like, I just really like endings. Like, you know, if someone's telling a story, if it never gets anywhere, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're like, all right.
Like a conclusion, as like this interview is proving, if I just rabbit on forever, it's you just disengage, you know what I mean? And really an ending is the reason a story exists. Like, there's a point, it reaches a conclusion of sorts.
Do you work backwards because of that?
Yeah. Well, actually, I work forwards to start with, and then I find, like, this sort of implies this is how this movie will resolve, roughly. And then I stop the beginning, and I go, the most important part of the film is the end. So then I try to find the end in a way that feels it's going to be most satisfying. And then when you find that and you strengthen that and you go, this wins over everything else. This should be whatever I have to do to the beginning to make this work, is I'll change the beginning to make the end work. I won't change the ending to make the beginning work. If you know what I mean? Like the ending is the king. And so, and also I love, you know, I don't know, pick your movie, but to me, all my favorite films growing up had such strong cinematic, I think the best third act in a movie, I mean, there's a few great ones, is probably Return of the Jedi. Like, in the way that it has this triangle of intercutting between like a ground battle. I know it's Ewoks and I know, you know, everyone's got their opinions, but you've got this kind of what is essentially like a guerrilla warfare in a jungle, a forest. And then you've got this insane space battle, like epic space battle. And then you've got this very Shakespearean, emotional, characters you truly care the most about fighting to the death. And all three affect each other. And as one goes wrong, the next one goes wrong, the next one goes. And as one goes right, And that intercutting is kind of like, I think it's one of the high benchmarks of third acts. And so, yeah, you're trying to emulate your heroes a little bit. So like the benchmark's so high for third acts that you've got to at least try to do something.
I just laughed because you name check a Star Wars film that's not your own, because I think your third act in your Star Wars film does all of those things. We'll get to that in a second. Real quick, One of the surprises that I liked most about this film, and I'm assuming that's the case with a lot who saw it, was that it genuinely challenged my feelings and beliefs about AI in ways that I never had before. And I didn't see that coming, and I imagine that that was a goal of yours. But I do have a bit of a hard time reckoning with the moral logic of the film. Humanity is largely painted as the ruthless villain, which I am fine with and largely, unfortunately, agree with. And AI is portrayed as this benevolent, growing being. But if AI is our creation, wouldn't they also inherently be like us, good and bad?
Yeah, probably. Maybe more so, like more extreme versions of good, maybe more extreme versions of bad. I don't know. It's tricky because making this film, I wasn't fully trying to set the record straight on AI, you know, at all. It was kind of a fairy tale about people and things that are different to us, you know. And I chose AI as that metaphor. I think the big question is AI, I mean, we hit points in the film when we were telling the story where it was tricky, because if AI is a bad guy, like we needed to redeem AI in our movie in some way, and we needed to, if they had started this war, it's sort of unforgivable, you know what I mean? And you can get into the whole, like, you know, you see it in the real world, unfortunately, all the time, where one person does something bad and the whole group is labeled as bad that that person belonged to, you know, or few people belong to. And so the question is, if AI did something bad, would all of AI be punished for it as a group? Just like if a self-driving car plowed into a crowd of people, would all self-driving cars be banned, you know? And I think the answer feels like probably, to at least for a bit, like we do tend to do that. We do go, you look a lot like these people and you have a lot in common with them, and these people have been bad, so we're going to say all of you are, we don't like all of you, right? And that's kind of a very reoccurring human trait. And so in the AI in our movie, we tried to do it that way. We tried to have it that some AI were bad, and but not everybody, like, don't, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater. But in all our test screenings and things, people just couldn't get over it. Like, they just didn't like AI if any of them did anything bad. So we had to kind of remove that a little bit to have people be rooting for them by the end. And it was more interesting what it said about us in the way that we judge groups than any agenda I had about AI being good or baddies or anything.
So I want to touch on Rogue One real quick. I've long felt that it is my favorite and it is the best Star Wars film, because I think you focus on the war part and the fact that war is hell. And I think that this is a belief that has been growing for a few years. I'm curious what you think it is about your film that makes people like me think this way.
Oh, God. I'm the last person to be able to answer that question.
Then how does it make you feel?
I can tell you what we tried to achieve. When you get given a Star Wars movie, and essentially you get given something that's like, Star Wars to me is pretty perfect. You know, it's, as a movie, A New Hope is hard to fault. I think it's one of the holy grails of cinema. And then someone says, go make a prequel to that. Where can you go that's got anything interesting to say? And I think the thing that I felt was that I was a kid when I watched Star Wars, and innocent and naive. And I saw it, this hero or these heroes, and I saw an adventure and the idea of shooting spaceships and blowing up a Death Star, and it was all like really exciting, and I want to be Luke Skywalker. And then you grow up and you see the real world version of that stuff unfolding, and you realize oh shit, when you blow up the Death Star, you're actually killing loads of innocent people that were probably just engineers and, you know, just, you know, servicing that whole facility. And when you shoot those spaceships, you know, that pilot probably has a wife and kid. And this idea that war is this adventure, exciting adventure, that it starts to feel like false. And the truer, so it felt like that there's something to say there. And so the first, like on the first day or so, it was like, let's just invert all the assumptions about Star Wars. So essentially what Star Wars to me was, is a boy who dreams, who's stuck at home and dreams of joining a war. And so it's like, let's tell a story of a girl who's stuck in a war and dreams of going home. And it was like, and that was then something like, it was like a mirror on A New Hope. And you kind of go, that then felt like, okay, we can do Star Wars. We've just flipped the polarity of a lot of things. And now it all felt justified a bit. Like there was something to say, and it wasn't just repeating, like doing a karaoke number. And so that felt like the intention. And then who knows how good or bad we pulled it off, but that was definitely how it started.
Well, I love that film, Gareth. It's one of the few that I own. I've got to wrap here. Real quick, I just want to ask, I have seen a few rumors about you and Thor 5. Do you have any interest in that at all or anything along those lines?
I saw those rumors too. I saw it and I jokingly sent it to my girlfriend. I just texted her the link and said, I didn't want you to find out this way. I've never heard anything about it. It's totally, the internet is an incredible place.
Is that something that you would want to do?
I love, you know, those movies. I love Marvel. A lot of my friends work on Marvel films as well. I'm very excited about the future of cinema, personally. I feel like everything we did differently on The Creator are probably the strongest parts of the film. And I just want to push that even further. And I want to, like, and so having the freedom and, you know, being able to take risks, like being allowed to fail, you know, I think that that's all important part of any creativity. And so, so I think I'm very excited about having another go at my own film. And I love all these other movies, and I love all the franchises. I go to see them all, and I have most of them on my DVD Blu-ray shelf. But I really want to keep pursuing this original sci-fi. And
that sounds great to us, because we want you to do that too, sir. Your films are fantastic.
Was that a very politically...
It was a not yet, but I'm not saying no either. Who knows that a check could always come his way.
I love all that stuff. I like, never say never in the right circumstances, absolutely. But I'm very lucky and very happy where I am. So,
all right, Gareth, thank you, man.
Thanks a
Appreciate
lot.
Appreciate your time. Folks, today I am joined by Jaimin Ansu, one of the finest actors that we have today. Thank you so much for your time today, man.
Thank you, sir. How are you? Happy
holidays. I'm doing well. And you, sir?
Very well, very well. We had an amazing opening yesterday. So I mean, a premiere yesterday. So yeah, the spirit is you know, it's quite high.
And I loved that. Was that pink or was that red jacket you had on?
It was sort of like orange pink.
It was nice, you know, my man. So yeah. I want to start with, let's start out a bit fun. Of all of the badass characters that you've played, if they got in a massive brawl, would General Titus come out on top? Or if not, who would?
Looking at our group, yes, it's fair to assume that General Titus will be on top, yes.
So you've played some really incredibly dramatic real-world roles. And I'm curious if the process of bringing gravity to a sci-fi character is the same, or if there's a different emotional wavelength you have to be on because the rules of the world are so different.
The rules of the world are quite different in this in Rebel Moon, but ultimately you still your biggest and your best guidance still is the story. The what was grounding about the story, its level of that reflects our reality. That is one. Coming off the page and reading this epic, written story, had really, it's the geopolitical tentacles that have been holding the continent of Africa back for a long, long time. A continent, the wealthiest continent, and still have very little to show for. And that was coming off the page.
Yeah, I had seen you say that last night at the premiere, and I did want to ask about that. Why do you think sci-fi is such a effective vehicle for talking about these themes?
Well, it's an effective vehicle because it's not pointing finger at anybody. It's just stating the fact that politics holding that continent back, pretty much the geopolitical that plays out in this story really resonates, volume for me in respect to this sub-Saharan Africa that still is trying to overcome tremendous trauma, right? Economic trauma. There's quite a bit of notion about our hypocritical carelessness about our planet as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so those elements were elements that spoke volume to me, and they were very grounding organically.
You speak to, and I love the way that, and I found this with a lot of the work. I love the way that you feel a responsibility that tells stories that are important to you and your culture. I find that incredibly inspiring. And to that point, in playing this role, because it made you think so much of the struggles that Africa has been through, I'm curious if there were any sort of revolutionary or political leaders that you drew from while building out this character?
Well, there are quite a few revolutionary leaders that I could see through this story, the interpretation of this story. Thomas Sankara from Burkina Faso. The likes of Nelson Mandela, for example, Stephen Biko, I mean, you name it, there were a lot of, political leaders that stood up to the indoctrination of the time and were all executed, one by one, they were all executed. This I find quite disturbing. Yes, but again, this is what making movies about, really, to be able to leverage or find connection with something so futuristic, so sci-fi fantasy that Zach has created, or been fantasizing about for over 30 years.
What I really liked about your character is that this is a man who has given up. He says, leave me here to die in peace. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, how satisfying is it playing a character who's given up on hope and needs to be brought back into the light? I imagine that's a very fulfilling arc.
It's a great arc to be playing a character that's have lost all hopes and but in a glimpse of hope that was ignited by another character. He sees the potential for justice. He sees the potential for redemption and the potential for for revenge.
So I need to pay you beyond a performance compliment, a physical one. You were in incredible shape for this film. And so I just really want to give you a chance to speak to all the hard work that you put in to look like that, because I think people deserve to know how hard you've worked.
It was a lot of hard work. Nothing came easy. Little that I knew that, to be part of a Zack Snyder film required a level of military training, which I didn't expect. And let alone that, we also had to watch what we inject in our body day in and day out. There's a serious level of care in which the food we ate was well calculated, planned, and we all ate pretty much the same thing, the whole cast, day in and day out. And so I think that brought a certain camaraderie, amongst us, and where it really it brought us together as a unit, rather than a fragmented, where everybody is doing their individual, bits. And so there was tremendous dedication from day one, 2 months prior to filming, and throughout filming, we were all on this series, sort of like a regimented, training.
So I hate to make this point to you, but you were pretty much the OG of the film. And not just that, but you're the only Academy Award nominee on the cast as well. So I'm curious if those type of things give you an...
Am I the only one? Because we have
Hopkins, but that's his voice.
Anthony Hopkins. Well, yes,
that's his voice.
Indeed.
Voice.
Yes. All right.
Fair point, though, sir. Yeah, but my point is that does sort of being the elder statesman of a cast give you an extra sense of responsibility or put a bit more weight on your shoulders?
It did, in some weird fashion. It did, but at the same time, we were all. It felt like we were all in this together. We were all striving and, having to live out this, fantasy world that Zack created. Little that I knew that 30 years ago, 30-some years when I began my career in Hollywood, I was still a model at the time, and I would go to the film school and pose as a subject for most of those film students. And he happens to be one of the film students who took pictures of me back then, and he still remembers and went back and found the picture that he took back, 34 years ago. But so that was quite, it was amazing to
it's funny
to
because you look the same age now as you did then.
I'm working on it.
So I do want to swing over to Gladiator. Right. Now we are free. I will see you again, but not yet. As far as I'm concerned, that is one of the great lines in film. I've been alive for 30 years, and that's one that just rattles around in my head all the time. And I think a large part of that is the way you deliver the line.
Right.
It's filled with optimism, but sorrow. So I'm just curious. Can you tell me about filming that scene? You get the last line in that film, which has gone on to become one of the great movies of the last 30, 40 years. So I'm just curious, pops into your head when you recall filming that line?
A lot of things. We'd had a tragic death prior to that, in which we lost, you know, the head of the gladiators, Oliver Reed. And I guess in the process of losing him in the making of it, it changed the fabric of, it changed a lot of things for Ridley Scott. And we kept on filming, and one day I get, really pulled me on the side and said, here, have a look at this. And this is sort of like the idea of what we, how I want to close it up. I said, okay. And I'm looking at this, and he said, but please keep it to yourself, hush, because the studio doesn't know yet. The actors, nobody knows. It's just you and me. And we will film this at the end of the day. It's the last day of the week. It's a Friday. And I remember vividly, it was somewhat sundown. And we were in the middle of the arena, of the Colosseum, the Gladiator Colosseum in the film. And really just, you know, literally said, let's go. And let's go was, we were filming that particular shot, that scene, in which, yeah, of course, I said those words, and they were powerful, but I didn't think anything more of it at the time, because, again, it was something that was not agreed upon, or it was still debatable, given the fact that, you know, the studio hasn't agreed to it yet. Russell Crowe himself had to had a yay or nay to be said about that, and so I filmed that, and literally the next day I left town. I rapped for the film, mm-hmm. and fast forward to, you know, screening the film, and that's when I discovered that the that scene. Was beautifully the way he shot that sundown empty arena, because everybody was gone, most of the cast was gone, the crew, most of the crew was gone. It was just a couple elements of Ridley's cameraman and cinematographer who was left behind, and it became what it became.
That's one of those scenes, lines, shot that's going to be a staple of cinema for decades to come.
Thank you.
Seen conflicting reports, and mm-hmm. if you can't talk on it, I totally get that. Are you mm-hmm. involved in the sequel at all?
Honestly, no.
Okay.
And this was a pure accident in the way it unfolded. But I was going to be part of it.
Okay,
the circumstances dictated to be something different, but yeah.
Such is life, right, sir?
Such is life.
So I'm sure I am about to be the millionth person to tell you, but obviously your work in Blood Diamond is incredibly powerful. It's one of the purest distillations of father and son love, which is like mm-hmm. arguably one of the most important stories that mankind can tell.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also an incredibly demanding role, both physically and emotionally.
Yes.
And I saw you telling GQ that a lot of your time was spent just with Leo walking out in nature. I'm curious, were there any moments between you and him where the importance of telling the story pushed you through the difficulty of making it and you know, just...
The nature of that story... I mean, it still gives me chills, but the nature of that story was enough for me to be extremely connected emotionally, right? So we didn't need to talk or say anything about it, because it's a fact. It's a fact when you look at the makeup of the continent of Africa, you look at the geopolitical tentacles that have been holding that continent back for centuries, it's inevitable to... it would, it's inevitable not to feel. It's inevitable to not to be organically, emotionally connected to this story. And there was nothing that you needed to be said that would make, it would just... I was alive from the moment we Ed Zwick start rolling and telling this story. I was alive from that moment to the end. There was
Are you almost not performing? Are you basically like you're in the soul of this guy, you know?
Yes, I'm in the soul of that guy and for that character. And there was nothing. Everything about it was very organic and very connecting, very emotional. There's nothing was planned. Nothing was sort of like created or constructed or have to be built up for me to feel any connection at all. I mean, it was all very organic. I didn't, in the same way I was extremely organically connected during Amistad with Steven Spielberg, same here.
Right. So those are two films I'm sure you get asked about all the time. I'm going to ask you about one that I'm not sure you'll get asked about as much, and that's Constantine. That is a movie that I have loved for 20 years. I just spoke to Francis a few weeks ago, and I got to tell him, like, how this film has become such a cult hit.
Right.
It's become such a cult hit. They're making, or at least they're trying to make a sequel. You come in, man, and you steal the whole show.
Papa Midnight.
Yeah, just an awesome character, the world that he's in. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about filming that scene with Keanu and what you most recall.
I would think that, again, that also was very organic in which in the character, the way I was portraying the character, there's so much of the portrayal of that character that mimics so much of the history of where I come from, and... And we're talking about Papa Midnight. Papa Midnight is almost like a modern day voodoo priest, if you will. Mm. Trying to guide with a bit of notion of that world, trying to guide and give some substance to Keanu Reeves' character. But that also was very organic, even though it was more fun and a lot more relaxed. But I still, dug into my past, my cultural heritage in order to play that. Yes.
And I know that they're very early in the stages. Have you heard from Francis at all about the sequel?
No, I have not heard from Francis. I haven't seen Francis in ages, and it would be lovely
Francis, let's go, man. Yes, let's get together.
Yes. No, but I know that they've been talking about it for some time, and I know that it's been, reoccurring, and certainly Keanu Reeves made a statement about what, a character that he would love to replay, and that was that, yeah.
Diamond, I've got to wrap here. As I said, the seriousness with which you approach your work and the responsibility that you place on telling important stories, I believe, makes you a true artist. And for that, I appreciate you, man.
Thank you. Much appreciated. Happy holidays to you. Thank
you
so much for that.
Same, Diamond. Thank you, sir. All right, that is going to do it for this week, this month, and this year on the Post Credit Podcast. I thank you all for tuning in, whether it be your first time or your 10th time, however many times you tuned into the show. We appreciate it. We will be back next year, whenever sees fit. I have an interview coming up with Vincent D'Onofrio from Daredevil and such that will be dropping earlier in the year, so stay tuned for that. I hope you all have happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year. All that stuff, Cade, all of that goes to you as well, my man.
Me too. Thank you, man.
All right. We will talk to you later. My name is Peace. Maximus Decimus.